Welcome to episode 352 of the Countdown Podcast, where we get Disney on your asses this week, folks. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. This week is the follow-up to episode, I think it was 190, which we did with the So I Married a Movie Geek podcast.
Obviously, I don't know.
Justin and Chrissy.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Justin and Chrissy?
I remember Justin and Chrissy.
Who have disappeared off the podcast radar. We miss them dearly.
Yeah, come back. And
come
you
back soon.
Work
soon.
It out.
You know, not just because I was on a fantasy movie draft, which never got released.
Really?
Was.
Okay.
Because it's a great show. Anyway, we did top 10 Disney animated films.
Mm.
And we said, well, let's do the live action. But given the, I just don't know if we're going to come back. Why don't we at this holiday season?
Mm.
You know, by the time I listen to this, of course, Christmas is gone. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and a festive season / holidays. If you're not of that denomination, here are some films you can watch to celebrate the spirit of being home alone, not alone, with the family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. Except... this was fucking hard.
Yeah. See, here's the thing, Paul.
Not talking about my Johnson.
Yes, not for change. I mean, the Disney...
I stand resolute, motherfucker.
Shut up, you're a bitch.
Multiple levels of funny if you think about it.
No. So, yes, the Disney live action...
stand resolute.
Would you please eat some dicks? Yes, as I was saying, Disney excels with its animated shit. And you might say, based on what Paul said, that they're not so good with the live-action stuff. I don't know.
Did you have an easier time this
week? No, it wasn't easy. But like, I will say you this. There's a bit of nostalgia going on with my list. Like, you know.
Me too.
Yeah. So, you know, it's because they don't do R-rated films, Paul.
Never.
And let's face it. If it's not nasty and dirty, it's not that interesting.
Let's be clear here. We ruled out any animation. We ruled out Touchstone Pictures. We ruled out... mm-hmm. Anything 20th Century Fox or Marvel, exactly. Most importantly, there's not one Marvel film exactly. On our list. Because
it's straight Disney.
Straight Disney, because that would be cheating.
Right.
So here we are. This is what we got left. Let's find out then. There's no recount this week because there was nothing to recount. No one wrote to us, Wayne. I'm a little sad.
Nah, it's fine. People wrote in, but we were just doing a very early show recording.
What have I done to deserve this bullshit?
Fuck off.
No one wrote back about last week's show. Plenty of people wrote in about what they think are their top three Disney films. We'll get onto that at the end of the episode in the Pop 10 segment. But for now, on the other side of this music cue, let's do it. The top 10 Disney live-action films. The top 10 live-action Disney films.
You know you just quit in the middle of one of your echoes.
It's the subject of this week's countdown. Now, we've already discussed the parameters. Wayne, anything more to add?
Nah, let's just start. You want to go first?
Yeah, sure, I'll go first.
Hit it.
My list is fucking shit. There's no hiding it, so there's no point pretending.
No, I say what you do is you just balls out. You say, oh, fuck it, I like this film because of this. Or I kind of...
My number 10 is a film which I watched once and didn't mind it.
All right.
Back in 1991, directed by Joe Johnson, it's The Rocketeer.
That is low as fuck, sunshine! The Rocketeer is gangster, man! Really?
Is it?
Dude,
it's pretty good. It's not bad. It's all right. I don't know if I'd call it gangster.
It's the shit. Like, Rocketeer was so... Well, do you know what it's about? Tell us what it's about, Paul.
It's about a dude, basically a superhero.
All right, he's a stunt pilot, right? His name is Cliff Secord, and he stumbles across a hidden rocket-powered jetpack that he thereafter uses to fly without the need of an aircraft like a motherfucker.
It's got Jennifer Connelly in it.
Jennifer Connelly. Yeah, we all remember Jennifer Connelly. And
circa 1991.
Get this, Howard Hughes is in this film, as in there's a character who is
Jerry
Howard Hughes.
Quinn, yeah.
Yes, and the FBI and stuff, they start missing for the hunt for the missing jetpack, and there's Nazi operatives that
the
stole it from
Howard. The bad guy is...
Timothy Dalton, James Bond. So it's
top billion, my dad.
Absolutely. No, this movie is great, man. It's actually, I don't know, I want to say ahead of its time, but the actual characterization is actually what's better about this movie. Don't get me wrong. I think it's pretty with all of its 1920s looking shit. But the Rocketeer himself flying around in his little rocket suit, and his helmet is the only thing that's the rudder that makes him fly, which is like...
which is ridiculous.
Exactly. But it's like, why not? You know, it looks really, really cool. And so...
I assume this is based on some kind of comic.
It is based on the comic, and it's... Look, I mean, you know, I always thought that because the bad guys in this film are Nazis, this could have made it to Indiana Jones status because everyone hates the Nazis. But
correct.
There's Clark Gable and W.C. Fields, and all real people are actually characters in this film. So it's kind of fucking cool, I always thought.
Look, I thought it was fine.
I actually just thought it deserved a much bigger reception when it came out. It actually tanked, right? But the source, the material itself, it's since become sort of a cult film or whatever. Mm-hmm. But worth mentioning, Captain America, The First Avenger, which I think is great. Same director. So, you know.
And you know why they went for him for that.
Exactly. Because this was his audition. He's really, really cool, right? 20 years
before.
Yeah. I mean, it took a while, but like, I actually think Rocketeer could have become a franchise. It just didn't. It's just bad time. Something went wrong, but it's a great film. So,
well, you say great, I say good.
Yeah,
which is why it's my number 10. All right, Wayne, you're number 10, sir.
All right, so from my glowing Rocketeer review to an admission that I did quite like National Treasure Ball.
Thought about it, and I would absolutely pan you,
dude,
and take you to the fucking abattoir over this. That's, I'm just making that word up, that statement up, but because this list is so thin, I get it.
Well, I'll be honest with you,
thinner than a cut of meat at that said abattoir.
National Treasure is Nicolas Cage, right?
What am I even doing here?
He plays Benjamin Franklin Gates. That's right, because he's a descendant of Ben Franklin. He's a historian. He's an amateur cryptographer. He searches for huge lost treasure and precious metals and shit like that. This is basically a ripoff of the Da Vinci Code, but American.
But it was before it. So Da Vinci Code is technically a ripoff of National fucking Treasure.
Wait, 2004. This happened before the... No, but the book came out before 2004.
I don't think so. I'm going to look it up while you keep talking.
All right, fine.
Any chance to shit on Dan Brown is my jam.
This is true. Now, the film is essentially about him going around Washington instead of Paris, okay? Looking for clues and shit. And basically, it's on the back of the Declaration of Independence. It's a coded, unseen map. And it points to a secret location of a national treasure. But of course, he's not alone in his quest. He's got like a sidekick and there's a woman. Paul, what happened?
Right, well... I would suggest to you, if this film came out in 2004, they were working on it at the exact same time this book was published. 2003, Da Vinci Code was published. 2004, National Treasure. Is that what you said?
Yep, 2004 movie.
So they were at the same time. That said, Angels and Demons was published in 2000.
Yes. No, this is a ripoff of Dan Brown. Okay, come on now. All right? And you can tell anyway, all right? So the whole film itself is actually kind of fun because if you don't mind that it's a ripoff or what we are deemed to be a ripoff, it's pretty good because you're looking at all these symbols and Nicolas Cage is being Nicolas Cage-ish, but he's not.
Good.
I liked it. I actually liked the second one too.
What?
I don't care.
Is it on your list?
No. But thank God. No. But that was like, you know, that was rushed out in 07. But because, you know, Sean Bean's in this.
Feels it was rushed out 3 years later, that's for sure.
That's right. So, like, it's just fun. And Nicolas Cage is not being too Nicolas Cagey. He's actually a little bit dorky. He's a little bit like Stanley Goodspeed.
Oh, yeah.
He's a little bit that
guy. Your absolute favorite.
Instead of the other guy. So, I quite like National Treasure. Hey, my number 10.
Fair enough. My number 9, I don't think you've seen it. It's directed by Gavin O'Connor, mm-hmm. who directed Warrior.
Okay.
It's called Miracle. And it came out in 2004.
I've not seen it. Go on.
And it is based on the true story of the 1980 US men's Olympic hockey, ice hockey team, which defeated the all-conquering, probably, let's be fair,
What?
Steroid-using Russian team, who had defeated everything that came before them.
That's fine.
And this men's Olympic team were like mostly up-and-comers. They weren't like amazing players. Kurt Russell plays the coach.
Kurt Russell did so many fucking Disney films.
This one was 2004.
I know. It's a later one, but yeah.
But, like, it's a good film.
Mm.
It's one of those against the odds film, which you know the outcome of because why are they making this movie otherwise?
Yes,
it's called Miracle on the Ice when they finally beat the Russians.
Okay. And good show?
Look, I enjoyed it. It has all the trappings of what you would expect from a Disney film, against the odds, blah, 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 blah. But because it's ice hockey, it just doesn't speak to me, nor would it to you in the way that it probably does to our North American listeners and friends. So Dan Brennick from the Netflix and Twill podcast. Do check out Dan's show, Netflix and Twill, because I was on it this week to do a much more extensive review of Spider-Man No Way Home.
I listened to that. Very insightful.
Dan had some answers to our questions.
Absolutely.
Whether you buy into them or not, I'm not sure. But
no, the guy knows about Spider-Man, man.
Absolutely. He is a full bottle. So do check them out. Anyway, this is one of his favorite films, and he was a little bit disappointed that I ranked as low as I did.
Wow.
But still, makes this list, which I think is something. I expect your vote this week, Dan.
Have you got any other Kurt Russell films on your list?
No.
Okay. So Kurt Russell did a film called The Strongest Man in the World.
What the fuck are you talking about?
It was back in like 50s. I don't know whenever it was.
Called the two shoes, tennis shoes man or some shit.
Heaps of weird shit like that. There's one where he's a smart cunt as well and like goes into quizzes and shit. All of those old Kurt Russell films, because he's so young, he looks like a 12-year-old basically, but he's playing like a college guy. Fond memories. None of those were on my list, but I just thought I'd shout them out.
Okay, all right, yeah. All right, that's my nine, Miracle.
All right, my number nine is a film called Popeye. Now, Paulie, there's real shit going on here, okay?
Do you really eat your spinach?
Like I think you should? Yes, absolutely. I actually saw this in the drive-ins. That's how old I am.
I think I did as well.
Yeah, 1980, everyone.
I reckon I fell asleep.
It's actually a musical comedy film, so you know Paul loves it. Directed
this
by...
This is why I fell asleep.
Hey, who do you think directed it?
Steven Spielberg?
Robert Altman.
Oh, shit. Okay. No, still, God, no, he did 1941. I'm mixing the two up.
Yeah. So...
They're exactly the same movie.
I'm telling... Well, Popeye... This is Robin Williams is playing Popeye, right? Shelley Duvall is Olive
from
Oil.
From The Shining.
The Shining, right? She's decidedly less harried.
Now, good casting.
It is good casting, and she was perfect as well. Now, I always liked the Popeye cartoon as a child, and I remember my dad saying to me, come out, we're going to do this thing. It's actually Mork. Mork is playing the lead, because he didn't know
Robin Williams was in.
And I'm like, sweet, I go in there. And the idea here is that spinach makes you strong and can bust caps. That's what Popeye does. But in this film, he actually hates spinach. He doesn't use it as his gambit at the end of a fight to beat Bluto's ass, who's a big motherfucker, by the way. This is really, really cool. Like, he's actually got big forearms and stuff. And there's one scene where Brutus Cousin tries to drown him. And you think he's drowned. And they're in, like, hip-deep water. And as Brutus walks away, Popeye's eating some spinach. And his fist just shoots out of the fucking...
So he finally does eat spinach.
Yeah, but only at the end of the film. He's getting his balls kicked in the whole time.
It's like, basically, Star Blazers when you fire the big gun.
Yes, fire the big gun. And then everyone wins. But it was actually really cool. And he did that thing where he used to twist his wrist. And then and he lets it go. The wrist spins around. And then it hits someone. He actually did that for, like... It was really cool at
the
time.
Do you think Henry Cavill stole that? For his
That's
fist
not
cock.
The same as the fist cock.
Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yes, it's exactly the same thing. But yes, giant octopuses, all kinds of shit happens in this film.
Giant octopuses is what freaks me the fuck out.
I know. It's a really unusual film, and it's 1980s, and I have fond memories of it. So, yeah Popeye. Fair it's on my shit. It's on my shit.
I don't think anyone mentioned that in the Facebook community. Not a surprise, let's be honest. My number eight, however... Not that many people mention it either, surprisingly. I think this is a good adaptation. This The Jungle Book, directed by Jon Favreau.
I never saw it.
From 2016.
Good and then.
Yeah, I think I remember
it made bank, didn't it?
It did make a lot of money. I mean, it had a really great cast. Had Bill Murray as Belt Blue, and Idris Elba, Scarlett Johansson, and Ben Kingsley, Christopher Walken.
Walken.
Can't you see? He's Walken.
Walken.
Anyway, I thought it was a great retelling of the classic story. Why wouldn't you give it a go? And the effects are really good at it. We did clarify special effects are fine. They're not animation.
Animation, exactly. Now, did you see this with your daughter?
No, she was way too young. She's only been 3 years old at this point in time.
Oh, so you saw this on your own back?
Yeah, watched it. Just watched it at home.
Huh. And good.
Again, for this particular...
Well, it made so much money.
I thought the effects were really good for 5 years ago.
All right. Nice. Jungle Book.
Jungle.
I remember the cartoon. Never saw this thing. So nice work. All right. Fine. Cool. Good eye opener. My number eight is Mulan. You on your list?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so again, it's a skinny list.
I mean, wow.
No, Mulan had good action. Now, the problem with the film...
Wow.
Well, I never saw the fucking... Shut up, bitch. I never actually saw the cartoon. So for me, I'm going in cold on the movie. Okay, right?
I have seen the cartoon.
And with all the wire work and the thing, that was kind of cool, I thought. And I think a lot of people actually said, yeah, bitch. I think lots of people actually... Well, the critic's response is that the action scenes and everything looks good. It just didn't quite get there. And the fact that they released it like in, you know, Disney Plus and in the movies, it kind of tanked.
Oh, yeah, it did tank. But we're not here to talk about tankage.
No, but I think it sort of started drawing the ire of a lot of critics.
Yeah, I think there's an absolute truth to the bigger a film tanks, the more it's tainted.
Yeah.
So think of something like John Carter, which I'm going to assume is not on your list. Nope. If you haven't seen it. It's not on my list. I thought that film was fine. It's not fine, good enough to make the top 10, but it's definitely in the top 20 Disney films.
Really?
I don't understand why it's being universally... It's a fine film. It's not great, but it does what it sets out to do.
It's because it tanked so hard. Yeah. It became so fashionable to shit on it.
Like fucking Cutthroat Island or...
That was a piece of shit, though.
I mean, vaguely remember watching it. I don't remember much about it. Ugh. But I knew that I was predisposed to hate it because it tanked so bad.
No, it actually wasn't great. Had a couple of good things in it, but it wasn't great.
Okay, fair enough.
So, yeah. Okay, yeah. So, Mulan. Again, I'm not, like, waving the flag for this one, but I remember when we watched it, it was, like, up during lockdown, and maybe...
Yeah, I think we did a review on it, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. It provided some comfort for me, but also I just did, like, the visuals, so I thought it wasn't a bad show at all.
Fair enough.
There you go.
My number seven is the first of the many, many throwbacks. I say many. One, two.
Some.
Two.
One of the two throwbacks.
Or other than the Rocketeer. Three on my list. This is from way back when. This is the older film on my list. I really dug this movie, and I think it helped shape my love of sci-fi. I probably watched it too early. I wouldn't have watched it in 1979 when it came out, but I would have watched it as a 6 or 7 year old.
Mm.
This is The Black Hole, directed by household name Gary Nelson.
I remember tell of The Black Hole. I never saw The Black
Hole.
Saw
Black Hole.
I think I saw it on TV. Like I walked past it. I wouldn't say I sat down and looked and watched
it. It's got Robert Forster in it. It's got Maximilian Schell. It's got Anthony Perkins.
Anthony Perkins, psycho.
Yeah, Ernest Borgnine, as well as the voice of, what's his name? No, he's actually playing Harry Booth. Roddy McDowell is the guy, the voice I was thinking of. So it's got a really great cast at the time, but it's this really kind of oddly high concept sort of sci-fi film for what's arguably a kid's
for
film.
For his time, sure.
Where they come across this sort of derelict sort of spaceship, USS Cygnus.
Okay.
It's a lost ship, and on it is Maximilian Schell, who's
spaceship,
gone.
You mean?
Yeah, spaceship.
So it's set in the future.
Yeah. Way in the future.
Sure, because they're in space. Got
he's
it.
Clearly gone mad. He's created this fucking robot who is going to destroy, well, not destroy everything, but he's his bodyguard. And when he gets upset with this crew, he sets the robot on them.
Really? This is quite dark for a Disney film.
He's doing all this research on this black hole, and he's basically saying, we need to go through the black hole to find out what's beyond. And then he kind of condemns them all by decaying the orbit of this ship that they're on because their ship has troubles and blah, blah, blah. Or he sabotages it. Can't even remember that part. Then it comes down to Maximilian.
Maximilian is the robot's name?
Robot, and he has these fucking blades which come out and whatever else.
Wow.
Just a great...
That sounds actually pretty harsh.
It's, there's this scene that I remember in my head.
Yeah.
Where they are going across this sort of walkway plank in this big, huge chasm of whatever.
Mm.
And this huge fireball a la sort of Indiana Jones, but much, much bigger, rolling towards them as they're trying to get out of the way.
Okay.
That is ensconced in my memory as one of the early iconic film-going moments for me.
Given that you were like 6 years, do you reckon you saw this on TV?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I didn't go to the movies to see this. I would remember. Well, my first film I went and saw was at 6 years old, which was 2 years after this film came out, and that was Empire Strikes Back. So.
Ah, nice. Okay. The Black Hole.
The Black Hole. I don't want to watch it again. I don't want to ruin it because I know it will suck if I watch it now.
Man, that's the same as my number seven.
Okay.
Dragon Slayer.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember this film? Now, I'll tell you what this is about.
Peter McNichol?
Dude, it's fucking Peter McNichol, Frank Spencer.
From fucking Ally McBeal?
No, It is Peter McNichol is in it, but the guy that you're thinking of is... No, actually, that is him. That is him. It is him.
Much younger version, right?
Much younger version.
20 years younger version.
Yes, and he was... This is what this film is about, right? It's 1981 it came out. It's a medieval set, and this like terrible-ass dragon is terrorizing the medieval land of Urland. It's the 6th century, and...
Jesus, you and your dragons.
I know, but like the representatives of the kingdom seek the assistance of this wizard to defeat the dragon, because apparently what happens is... Now, remember, this is a Disney film, right? They sacrifice 2 virgins a year to the dragon! This is the 80s! You could do all kinds of shit in the 80s in a kid's film.
Do you not know how many virgins Wayne sacrificed?
Shut up! You're an asshole! 0 is the answer. So... And what happens is, it takes a bit of a twist, this thing, because these townsfolk, they go to this great wizard, and the wizard fucking dies. And then it's like, holy shit, now what? And basically the whole, who's going to kill the dragon now, it befalls to his apprentice, who is Peter McNichol. And this is full of cool shit. He uses this amulet to create a fucking spear. It's the only spear that can pierce the dragon scale armor. And then he melds dragon scales into a shield that stops him from getting incinerated.
That's pretty cool.
It's fucking cool. And I think it was the basis. Do you remember a game in the 80s called Dragon's Lair?
Yes.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that was based on this. Dirk. Yes, that's him. And I'm pretty sure that was based on this. Because I remember the arcade version was like a cartoon and we couldn't move. It blew our
fucking joystick.
Yes, and it flashed. We blew our fucking minds. But I'm pretty sure it came from this film. And I think now.
That was the highbrow gaming when we were 10 years old.
Dude, I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw that there's a live cartoon you could actually interact with. Yep. So I was like, oh my God, we're in the future.
I know. This is hard to believe.
I know. This is how old we are, everyone. Fucking, oh shit. So, but yes, it's actually a surprise. Well, look, in my memory, it's a surprisingly awesome film. I won't watch it now.
I get it. I'm with you on the black hole. For
yeah.
Sure.
So I mean, but honestly, it was always one of my. I think this is maybe the first time I had come across the idea of sword and sorcery type shit.
Okay.
My big sister really loved it, so I'm into it. You know. So yeah, Dragon Slayer.
Well, sticking with the theme of shit that doesn't look cool if you watch it now. And this one I have rewatched.
Okay.
It doesn't hold up. It's directed by Steven Lisberger. It's Tron.
Tron
from 1982. Basically.
Yeah, yeah, look, yeah.
I loved this film when I was a kid.
Now,
fucking loved it. This concept of going into a game,
getting trapped in a game, like yeah, the computer goes, so and then it fucking
but imagine
sucks him in.
Yeah, those special effects at that time were mind-boggling.
Yeah,
because jaw fucking dropping. And Jeff Bridges, obviously being in it at that particular point in time, playing Flynn, and then becomes the avatar in the game. It goes to the game, has to survive, has to compete against the game. This concept might sound ridiculous now, but back in 82, whoa, because gaming was new, because computers were new, because whoa.
But also, it was so stark. The whole thing is dark, and anything that you see is neon lit. So there's grids, everyone's got those weird helmets, and there's parts of them that glow. And then the weird thing about the film is there's like, because they got the frisbees on their back, right? And that's what they used to fight with, right? But then there's
the light cycles and everything.
Light cycles, all that shit, right? But you see, like, in the film,
they create the fucking barriers, and if you drive into them, you explode.
That was all very, very cool. And but they used to, they actually lived as computer characters, and they would drink water with the frisbee from some place, and it's like, it was so surreal. And a lot of people actually bagged it when it came out because it was like, this is like, no one really understands the plot, and it kind of does go that way, or at least I remember struggling with it but being dazzled at the visuals. So there was also an arcade game called Discs of Tron.
Wouldn't surprise me. I'm sure there are many arcade games that try to.
No, but like you have to actually go into this housing, and it's like use the paddles and jump on, and it's really, really cool. But Tron was huge back in the day, so I can see you like this. Let me ask you this: any other Tron movies on your list?
Yep.
Okay.
There's only one other option.
Okay, we won't talk about that then. Tron. Yeah, like, I understand. Like, children of the 80s generally, you know, they remember this quite well. So, and I don't know about this next one, though, because it's also a 1981 film. Now, Paul, you may understand why I am the way I am if you think about this. This film is called Condor Man. All right? And I loved it, okay? American...
Did he also get a lot of ass?
No! He was a... You're an asshole! Well, no, this is... I got to restart before. This is the film where the lead is played by Frank Spencer. Do you remember that British sitcom Some Mothers Do Evan?
Oh, shit.
Oh, Betty.
I'm not sure I ever connected those two together.
That's fucking him. He's playing an American in here.
I vaguely remember watching. I don't remember anything about it.
He's a Broadway actor. He's like he's an opera actor, that guy, right? So it's well known. But
in my head, this is starting to meld with William Catt in The Greatest American Hero.
Dude, it's so... Because they both got a fucking 80s perm.
Yeah.
And they're both white, and they're both sort of fly, but not well.
Yeah.
Now, this film here, his name is Woody Wilkins, and he's an imaginative yet eccentric comic book writer and illustrator, and he demands so much realism from his comic book Condor Man that he starts to make his fucking flying suit and his outfit. And he actually builds one, puts it on, and jumps off the Eiffel Tower and almost dies, right? And that's what this film is about. But later on...
That should have been the end of the film.
No, because towards the end of the film, he starts getting all Batman kind of fucking cars and shit, and he finally figures out the flying... Because
he can finance that.
Oh, there's a lot of talking about it. The CIA involved. He's in Istanbul. Yeah. There's KGB motherfuckers.
It's all explaining Condor Man 2 and Condor Man 3 back to the Condor.
What are you talking about? I'm
clearly making this shit up. This thing was a failure, an utter fucking failure.
It was, but I fucking adored it. It's really, really... I love the fact that... It was kind of jokingly Disney. He's like, Condor Man. It was like, it was really played like that. But I remember just going... His car was like a Lamborghini. It was a modified Lamborghini. So I'm like, well, you know, in the 80s, that shit is cool. So, and also it had flames on it. So, you know, that's even more cool. Back in the 80s. I would never personally have it, but there you are. So Condor Man, I've always liked, everyone. Check out the fucking poster sometime. It's hilarious. It's drawn.
All right.
And not in a good way.
My number five, then, is the best foreign film on my list.
Uh-huh.
And it's also the best foreign film Disney's ever made, as far as I'm concerned. It's called Dungle.
I've never even fucking heard of it.
It's an Indian film. I know. Hold on. Right, I'm not a big Bollywood fan
Nor am I.
Because they are all universally way too long. I literally today finished watching one of the highest ranked Indian films on the IMDb top 250.
Bloody hell.
And it's called Andhadjun. And it's, which translates to blindly.
Okay. And is it good?
It's fucking a 90-minute film, which would have been fine without the songs and the padding.
Yeah, that's the Bollywood thing, though.
But with songs and padding, it's a piece of shit. Yeah. It's a fucking exercise in tedium. It's really boring.
Mm-hmm.
This film is 161 minutes and earns every minute of it. And it does have some songs in it, but they're not stopping to... I mean, maybe they stop to dance, but not in a...
What's it about?
...musical way. It's basically, it follows the true story of the life of Mahivar Singh and his two daughters, Geeta and Babita.
Yes.
And it follows them rising to become Olympic wrestlers.
Okay.
So it's a sports film, right? Masquerading as a Bollywood film. This film's good.
How did you even come across this?
Well, it's in the IMDb top 250.
Really? I looked in the fucking... Okay, it didn't even come across. Yeah, wow.
So Disney financed it and then distributed it.
Okay.
And it's really, really good. It's got a guy who is absolutely a fucking... His name's Aamir Khan, who's in almost all the top films ranked from Bollywood. Okay. He's put on a lot of weight here. He's the father. He is almost a chameleon. He's really, really good in terms of making himself into something he's not.
That's not something I expect when talking about Bollywood films. This is quite interesting.
Like, there are musical sequences, whatever, and there's a little bit of cutting to dancing from a wedding, but it's not... They don't stop and
it's
break
out.
It's
not a musical.
It's not a musical at all.
Okay, because if it was a musical, you'd
hate
it.
And it's really, I guess, almost realistic in the way sort of what happens or whatever. There's a film out right now, which I haven't seen yet, which I really want to watch before we do our top 10 and worst 10. I'm sure we're on top 10 if we're going to make it. King Richard, which follows Serena Williams and Williams' father, played by Will Smith, and helping them become amazing. That film is the Indian or the American version of this.
Okay.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that too because this film's primary for it. It's a really good movie.
Say it again.
Dungle.
Dungle.
Yep.
All right, cool. Good to know. My number 5 will make you laugh, Paul, but I've always liked the film and it's called The Three Musketeers.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That's
Wayne.
Right. Now
Come
we have
on.
Everyone, this is a Chris O'Donnell, Oliver Platt, Tim Curry, Rebecca De Mornay, Charlie Sheen and Kiefer Sutherland
what
film.
What the hell?
That's right.
This film sucks.
Now, to be fair, I will admit this, right? When I looked at this, I went, oh, that film, and I put it on there, and I thought to myself it was the Man in the Iron Mask. All right? Which is not a Disney film at all. But then I looked at this again, and I remember laughing about it because, first of all, I didn't mind it at all, right? It's bullshit because they've all got American accents, and it's flat, and, you know, it's that kind of thing.
It's all for love.
Yeah, that's it. The soundtrack had Sting, Brian Adams, and Rod Stewart.
I know,
it was
called All for Love.
Fucking great song. I've always loved it, okay? But the film itself, apart from being... Because Gabrielle Anwar was the chick in this film.
And they tried to make her into something, didn't they, Hollywood?
I was a big fan of hers. She did a sense of a woman.
Resigned to fucking Burn Notice.
So it was fine, wasn't it?
It's a very, very low bar to jump.
Well, in Burn Notice, right? I remember my ex-girlfriend used to really get pissed off at this and go, they're acting like she's hot in this film, like she's supposed to be the hot girl. I'm like, it's still fine. She goes, no, it's not. She looks like, you know, anyway, she was...
Whoa, hold on.
Very judgy, Wayne's ex-girlfriend.
Yes,
very judgy.
You definitely still hit that. So anyway, but the actual film itself is a lot of swordplay type stuff, and I do believe Oliver Platt is the Porthos guy who fucks everyone. Right?
Porthos the pirate.
Porthos the pirate. There, see, there was funny bits in this. There's shit going on. I actually
the most hilarious thing, of course, being that Oliver Platt could be scary at all.
But he played it well because he was like he even talks about the fine art of wenching in a Disney film.
Whoa!
In a Disney film.
Oh, suddenly it all makes sense.
Oh, shut up! It's got nothing to do with that. It's more the Kiefer Sutherland-y, Charlie Sheen-ish kind of all for one thing. By the way, I hate it when anyone says all for one in any kind of Musketeer movie. But I'm stopping short of suggesting you go see this. But I had a good time with it.
Right, so basically.
This makes complete sense to
you're
me.
A bitch, fuck off.
All right.
That's a terrible choice. You should be a fucking ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
My number 4, however, you should not be ashamed of. Nor will I be. It's Tron Legacy. It is the sequel to Tron. This is better than Tron. It looks better. They tried to make Jeff Bridges younger in that bit.
Did the youngification?
What work? But this is the guy who is going to direct, arguably, the film's going to be your number one next year, Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, word.
Joseph Kosinski, who also directed Oblivion.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tom Cruise guy.
This guy is, like, his visual style. He's, okay, I don't know if he's got a hold on character or...
I liked Oblivion. I didn't mind it at all.
Or kind of story, but, geez, visually he delivers time and again. This film... is astounding. It is one of only two films, I will argue, that warrant the 3D treatment.
Now, you saw this on your 3D TV. I
bought it on 3D.
Yeah.
I watched it at the cinema in 3D. I bought it on 3D. It looks amazing with the graphics brought from 1982 to 2010.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was cool.
It's astounding. It obviously follows Flynn's son, and he gets brought into the game as well, and he's trying to get his dad out and whatever else and survive. And then I believe it's Olivia Wilde.
Ooh.
Yeah. She's the graphic in the game. None of it makes any sense. The story is garbage. The visuals in this show, the action scenes are amazing. And what elevates it to number 4 and over the top of number of the original is the score by Daft Punk, which to this day
still good
resonates in my playlist. I listen to it at least every other week.
Paul listens to scores, everyone.
It's astounding good this is, and it will either lead or close this show. So,
all right.
Tron Legacy is my number four.
Nice one. My number four is Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Ooh, it doesn't count, man.
Yes, it does.
No.
Listen to my fucking research.
It's got animated characters in it, you dumb prick.
Fuck. Oh, shit.
All right, so Wayne, all right. No vote this week. No vote, it's fine.
Do you want me to
throw
one in there?
I've won the year anyway. I'm two ahead.
I don't give a fuck. Yeah. You know what? Don't vote then. It's all good.
No votes. Wayne just... Like, once again, it's like drop trowel. It took a big Cleveland steamer.
Yeah, you're right. It totally is.
Which part of Bedknobs and Broomsticks and fucking Pete's Dragon did not apply to Amblin Entertainment, which is a subsidiary of...
I actually wrote this at 2 a.m. last night, 2 a.m., so I'm sorry about that. That actually is bad. For some reason, it didn't register that it's an animated
film. Let me summarize by saying, Wayne's a cunt. Moving on.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Let's just say Who Framed Roger Rabbit is the shit and move on. Even though it doesn't belong on the list because Paul's also a cunt.
Oh, shit.
Okay,
man.
You know what's happening, everyone?
What?
It's Christmas Eve. Everyone's winding down for the year, including my brain.
Wayne initially was meant to go to work tomorrow, but we've had a COVID scare. So we're allowed to hang out here and do this, but we're not allowed to socialize in public without masks.
That's right.
And his boss just said, don't come in tomorrow.
I know.
On his last day. So he's just like, fuck everything.
Well, that's why I was able to go to sleep so late last night. But also why I was able to fuck this up. So terribly sorry, everyone.
Well, my number three.
Please.
To move it right along.
Go ahead.
And rescue us from this ridiculousness once again of you fucking the brief.
I mean, I'm fine with it.
Is also directed by the director of Mulan, Nicky Caro. It's called McFarlane, USA.
Huh? What's that?
It's a film that stars one of your favorites, Wayne, from 2015, Kevin Costner.
K-Cost?
Yeah.
Did a Disney film?
He did.
What's it about?
It's about running.
That's why I missed it.
Yeah. basically, he gets moved. So Kevin Costner plays this coach who was a high level. I can't remember what he was. It was baseball or some shit. I can't remember. Football.
There you go.
I punched the fucking mic.
Don't need to mention it. No one would have known.
Ow. And he gets fired from his job because he basically physically chastises a real cunt on his team.
Oh, fair enough.
And in a deserved way, but he gets fired from that. And he gets a job in a small, I think it's New Mexico town.
I sort of remember hearing about this one. Go on, yeah.
And just because he's got nothing better to do and it's a small fucking no one gives a shit town, there's no football team, whatever. He gets involved in the running team.
Mm.
And his sort of level of being able to motivate the kids versus their natural ability, which has been born from years and years of hard work, working in the fields and whatever else around the town, ends up creating this small team of athletes who challenge for the state title.
Nice.
And so it's against that. It's against the odds.
Underdog.
Yeah,
you know.
Underdog movie. And because it's running, I just loved it. I absolutely fucking loved it. The back and forth between the various runners in it. You know, there's the cocky dude, the serious dude, the fat dude.
Yeah.
Who, of course, becomes quintessential at some particular
point. Sure, fat dude's
and everyone's like, come on, man, run faster. And he's like, fuck your mother. But he doesn't say it because it's a Disney film.
Can I ask you this? Does it touch upon any of the themes that, as a runner yourself, you actually identify heavily with?
A little bit.
Or is it more the characters?
It's more about the character. It's more about the racism because he's a racist, Kevin Costner. He comes to his town. He doesn't give a fuck. He's like, you know, these little fucking kids.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Sorry. Yeah. He's paraphrasing, yes.
Very, very wrong. I'm going to bleep that out.
It's fine. Fuck off.
He's clearly a prick. But through the course of the film, he comes to realize people are people and he loves these kids. And that's the really uplifting bit.
The American History X.
And it's based on a true story.
Okay.
Which is the most important thing. Because when it gets to where they get to, it's not just, fucking Hollywood bullshit. It's real life.
Oh, all right. So Paul likes the realistic ending. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay, nice. My number three is going to be Tomorrowland. And now I know.
Wow.
Yeah. Remember Tomorrowland?
Wow.
Remember how they spent $400 million?
Wow.
Yeah. I actually still, like, I'm not saying that the movie worked completely.
It's got George.
Yes. It's not like I'm not going to like it. I think our issue was that, and remember, it is this list. Okay. So.
There's not a lot here.
There's not a lot here. Okay. So, but Tomorrowland itself, also known as Project T in some regions, believe it or not.
Really?
Directed by Brad Bird. Now, you know this guy.
Your fave.
Yeah. He's the shit. All right. It's a very, very like long, huge story, but it's about George Clooney moving. Basically, the actual movie itself, the thing that I loved about it is that it shows this idealistic world where they pulled all the best like scientists and this and that, and they said artists as well. And they, and for me, it's like, oh, you come out.
You want to talk to people like me?
Yeah, you count an artist among scientists and smart people. I like the idea that that can be equated at least. It gives me some validity. and as the film sort of, again, this is one of those things that it tanked, right? By comparison, because they spent so much on it and so much promoting it. And it just didn't quite get there. It was so big, it didn't really turn out to be anything. But it is amazing to look at, and it is actually a good enough show. It's just that it didn't give you the moment because of all the expectation you had from the market.
I didn't hate this movie. I think I put this in the same realm with John Carter.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it.
Fine.
That's movies. The problem. They spent so much money, and it only got that good.
Not
that's
sure it deserves
it
to be at three, but still.
Yeah. Again, this list.
Well, my number two is the most recent film on my list. I watched it this year, and it's a live-action adaptation from Disney, which they are not renowned for being good films, although they do make money. And this one tanked because it came out during COVID times. But I took my daughter to see it. Had a great time. This is one of my daughter's favorite movies. And
what?
Maybe it was her, like you've talked about who you're with and how they're responding to a film really,
totally.
Really ramps it up. Came out day and date onto Disney Plus, but we still went to the movies to see it, to the cinema.
Little event, yeah, for you and your daughter?
Yeah, because we just needed something to do. It's directed by Craig Gillespie. It's Cruella.
Oh, right. So it's good.
I dug the
shit out of
this movie.
I think I remember you telling me that it was good.
Really enjoyed it. Like,
is it Glenn Close?
No. Glenn Close is the... Original live action.
Yeah, okay.
This is her, Emma Stone,
yes,
playing a right. much younger version, and how she becomes Cruella de Vil.
Cool.
But I've never seen 101 Dalmatians, nor 102 Dalmatians, or anything like that.
I don't remember.
So I have no attachment to the character. So I don't give a fuck that they are cleaning her up and making her nicer than she could possibly be if she's going to end up becoming that character. It doesn't make any sense. I 100% agree. If you're a hardcore Disney fan, and you love that film and love the evilness of that character, you won't like this movie.
So this movie depicts her as a good person?
No, she goes through bad phases. But she goes through bad phases because of reasons that you understand.
Okay.
And she does treat some of her friends pretty badly in it, but she comes to realize that's bullshit and atones for it.
So does the end of the movie ring true to the fact that she turned out to be a cunt?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
So I get the hate here. Because they're cleaning up this villain character instead of just leaning hard into it and just going, fuck it, here she is, right?
What a shame. What a shame. Because I always like it when, even though it's a prequel, it's a redemptive story, sort of.
Well, it is a redemptive story. And it does explain why she might become evil later, but it doesn't show it in this film.
That's totally fine. These are all whining-ass fucking Gen Xers.
I tend to agree. Emma Stone's great in it. This is going to blow your mind when, so prepare yourself.
Bring it.
The fashion's great.
Paul gave a fuck about fashion.
Because that's a big part of the she's sure. a fashion designer. And Emma Thompson is her mentor in the film. And works for is the top fashion designer in London. And she comes to be a mentee to her and is designing things that she's, yes, this, then, not that. All that stuff comes off to pay off in a big, big way through the course of the film.
Nice.
So I really, really enjoy this movie. I think all the performances are great. The direction is top notch. There's some excellent one-shots. Craig Gillespie is a guy who did I, Tonya. Have you watched I, Tonya?
I have, and that's the shit.
Yeah.
That's so a great fucking
that
film.
Alone is enough to get you in. Watch this movie.
Cool. You've actually opened my eyes a bit. I would never have looked at this otherwise. All right, Cruella, well done.
Nice, thank you.
Nice one. My number two is where I put Rocketeer, bro. That's
oh,
how much
wow,
I like it.
Wow, fuck.
Yeah. I think it's one of the best
things. I remember you talking about before somewhere on the show.
Yeah, I love that shit. Love that shit.
I wonder if you have the same number one then. Let's find out.
You have to, man.
Surely. All right, so reading through my 10 through 2 to reveal my number one. Number 10, The Rocketeer. 9, Miracle. 8, The Jungle Book. 7, The Black Hole. 6, Tron, the original. 5, Dungle. 4, Tron, colon, Legacy. 3, McFarlane, comma, USA. 2, mm-hmm. Cruella. And my number one is Pirates of the Caribbean, colon, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Of course it is.
Thank God.
Of course it is. Absolutely.
Thank all the stars.
It's okay. I'll tell you what.
All the celluloid.
Since it's obviously mine too, let's go through mine and we'll talk about it, okay? My 10 was National Treasure. 9, Popeye. Yeah. 8, Mulan. 7, Dragon Slayer.
Yeah.
Yeah. 6, Condor Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5, The Three Musketeers. Sure.
No.
4, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Sorry.
Wrong.
3, The Rocketeer. Sorry.
No,
sorry. 3 was Tomorrowland. 2, The Rocketeer. My number 1, of course. Pirates of, we used to call it the Flapperpean.
So you used to call
it. I'm pretty sure you said it once. Okay. Tell us about Pirates of the Caribbean, Polly.
Look, this film. I think it's, I don't know if Johnny Depp ever really went away until now. He's been cancelled, basically.
Yeah. Synopsis. The story follows pirate Jack Sparrow and blacksmith Will Turner, Orlando Bloom, as they rescue the kidnapped.
And?
And?
Keira Knightley.
Keira Knightley, they rescue her.
Elizabeth
from
Swan.
The cursed crew of the Black Pearl, captained by Hector Barbosa, Jeffrey Rush,
yep.
Who becomes, they basically become undead skeletons in the moonlight. So,
I think if you want to look at perfect casting for a film, this might be it.
Absolutely.
Johnny Depp channeling Keith Richards is a revelation in this movie. It's such a revelation that they decided to make five.
There's like 1,000 of them.
There's at least four more films with
at
him.
At least.
And they're all Law of Diminishing Returns, right?
But even the
this
third one.
Yeah.
This
one was stellar.
Dude, I was
I watched it again 2 months ago.
2 months ago?
With my daughter.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's big. This one was the gangster one. I just picked up this interview with Johnny Depp where he talked about how he developed that character. He said, in the original screenplay, Captain Jack was written as a swashbuckler, a pirate who swings in, fights a bit, swings out, grabs a girl, and that's it. I had different ideas for him. This sounds weird, but Captain Jack was born in a sauna, my sauna. I was looking at various aspects of the character, and I figured this guy's been on the high seas for the majority of his life, and therefore he's dealt with inescapable heat to the brain. And he said, so I cranked up the sauna to like 1,000 degrees, sat there as long as I could until it started to affect me mentally. It was very hot, so was my brain. When you're in that kind of heat, you can't stand still. So it gave him the idea that Jack's brain is parboiled. And so that's why, in terms of his body language, he would have sea legs, but when he gets on land, he cannot get land legs, and that's why he's wobbly and doing that thing. Well, that's how he came from.
That's interesting. It's much more detail than the assumption I made. He's just always drunk on rum.
Exactly. This is. I mean, that's how it works, right? But like, it is cool that he managed to do that. Because obviously the studio would have gone, you know, Johnny Depp, what's up? You know. But I got a few interesting facts about the film here.
Well, can I just add?
Please
again,
tell me.
Orlando Bloom as the pretty boy. Keira Knightley, perfect. Jonathan Pryce is her dad. Fucking, even Jack Davenport.
Jack Davenport rocks. I've always liked Jack Davenport.
Perfect as the stuffy English fucking officer. And Jennifer, I really love in this film that he kind of has an element of nobility. He doesn't force himself on Elizabeth or whatever. And he kind of concedes when, well, we would have lost if it wasn't for, well, I'll give you a head start.
Yes, it's a good character.
All that shit's good. And yes. I don't know if it holds up in the following films, but here you kind of don't hate him by the end of it.
Yeah.
Which is weird for this kind of film.
I always like it when you can actually find some redeeming things about characters and it becomes something that works.
Barbosa is a complete cunt.
Yeah, but even he's Jeffrey Rush. It's like, you know, it's like it's kind of good to watch. Yeah. So that was why it was a good movie.
I think the casting was really itself. Gore Verbinski is the perfect director for this. He is so good at melding all these different bits together. Based on a Disney ride, they create this. This is astounding. By comparison, watch fucking Jungle Cruise from this year. What a massive piece of shit.
Is that based on a Disney
ride? Oh my God, yes it is.
I never even went near it. Yeah. You talked about casting.
Go ahead, please.
Orlando Bloom, that role, the people they considered were Jude Law, Heath Ledger, Ewan McGregor, Tobey Maguire, someone named Ben Peyton, and Christian Bale, all considered, but Bloom won partly because of his Lord of the Rings related stardom.
The only one who I could see in that role, looking right now at the face of Orlando Bloom, is a slightly older, slightly less good looking Christian Bale.
Yep, I'm on board with
everyone else is a terrible decision.
Christian, yeah, okay. But Orlando Bloom did a good job.
I'm saying Bloom wins, but if I had to, I would alternate in Christian Bale, but no one else could fill that role that you just described.
No, I agreed. And developing Jack Sparrow, the writer and co-creator, looked to Hugh Jackman as an inspiration, but Johnny Depp got the role.
Okay.
So that's kind of interesting. And Keira Knightley was only 17 years old during the filming of this.
Jesus Christ.
Her mother came with her everywhere on set. So, like, it was... Oh, and Johnny Depp wore contact lenses that acted as sunglasses so he wouldn't squint in the fucking heat of the fucking thing. So very kind of cool, like...
She was 17, hybrid. So she was born in sort of 85.
Yeah,
God
man.
Damn.
They're fucking young. It's too skinny for me anyway. All right, so...
All right, that's all. Any honorable mentions, Wayne?
Yeah, man. My honorable mentions go like this. Cool Runnings?
That's my only honorable mention.
Okay, because that was great. Yeah, man. Tanka, you're dead. Yeah, man. Can I do that? Fuck it. Great. The Great Muppet Caper.
Yeah,
big fan. I also had Tron Legacy.
Good.
And yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
Nothing else from me. So let's get straight into it then. Your feedback on the topic at hand, the segment that wraps up every show. It's called the Pop 10.
Talk about Pop 10. Talk about Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Joey DiCarlo from the So Wizard podcast. Number 3, the aforementioned Pirates of the Caribbean, colon, Curse of the Black Pearl. Number 2, Flight of the Navigator.
Ooh.
I do remember watching that film. I liked it at the time.
I don't remember it.
Never seen
it
again.
Yeah.
Nice choice there, Joey. And number 1, The Rocketeer. So
yeah, boy.
Jonathan Kidd had, again, Pirates, the first one, the only one worth a piss. Number 2, Cruella. Woo! Still pretty amazed. I enjoyed this one. So am I, John. So am I. And number one, heavyweights. Ben Stiller doing dodgeball way before dodgeball. Never seen it.
I never even heard that one.
Nice. Smiley Samani, mate to us, said, number three, Something Wicked This Way Comes was pretty scary for a Disney flick when it was released in 1983. Number two, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids from 89. Who hasn't wanted to shrink their bratty kids? I haven't wanted to shrink my bratty kids.
I don't have any kids.
Kid. Smiley, that's just inappropriate. Inappropriate.
Yeah, seems fine, though.
Number one, The Love Bug, original 1968 version. How can you not love Herbie? Yay!
So not the Lindsay Lohan version?
He has specified.
I've not seen it.
Otherwise, John Amanda for the Pirate Comics Podcast. Do check him out. Another great show. Pirates, Black Pearl, and again, The Rocketeer, again, and The Black Hole. Yay!
Yeah, all right.
John, nicely done, sir. Paul DeBone said, Herbie the Love Bug, childhood memories. Number two, The Rookie. Bill Durham is not Disney, so next best thing. And number one, Homeward Bound. Woo, controversial.
Yes.
My children love this movie, and I love watching it with them. I guess we're just going to ignore the animal cruelty.
Yes.
Michelle Dodo said, I'm going all sports themed. Cool Runnings. Remember the Titans and The Rookie.
The Rookie. Did you see that?
No. I think it's Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, it is. I haven't seen it.
He's an old dude who gets to be a rookie in the major leagues, from memory. Hmm. I should watch that movie. I love fucking against the odds.
Yeah, you're a sports guy as well, yeah.
Erica San Pedro is number three, Parent Trap. Lindsay Lohan is a...
Oh, so the new Parent Trap.
Twin trying to get their divorced parents back together. So the new version, yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis,
yeah. Eight Below, based on the true story of Huskies Left Behind Antarctica, and Paul Walker tries to get them back. Sounds good.
Ooh, fast.
And number one, I've never heard of this, Togo. Based on a true story of a diphtheria serum husky run in Alaska with Willem Dafoe. I don't know if I said any of that correctly, but there we are, Willem Dafoe.
Nice. I've not heard of that window.
She said, bit biased because I own a husky.
Ah, very nice.
B-Dizzle, Billy Dunham from the We Watch the Thing podcast said, champions, aka Mighty Ducks.
Ah.
Quack, 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 quack.
Do you ever see them?
Yeah, I watched that one. Have you watched that?
No.
Okay, that's hence the quack just went down.
Fair enough.
Heavyweights number two, number one, Pirates of the Caribbean. I think we might have a consensus number one.
I think so.
Nick Orton said, Swiss Family Robinson from 1960.
Ooh.
Fly the Navigator and Hunter Shrunk the Kids again. That's a classic. Ashley Gorski, you're on her show coming up.
Coming
episode
up.
To be released.
Absolutely.
Roger and Hammerstein's Cinderella. Hmm. Number two, Aladdin. Ooh. Ooh. There's the live action. I'm surprised that wasn't on your list, actually.
I didn't mind it at all. Hmm. I didn't mind it at all.
Number one, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Nice.
And then last two to wrap it up, David Powell, patron extraordinaire, top level patron of the show, said, assuming we're getting rid of all animation. Number three, John Carter.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Number two, Alice in Wonderland. Number one, Tron.
Ooh, oh wow, old school.
And lastly, Blake Jarvis said, champions, aka Mighty Ducks. Number two, National Treasure, there, Wayne. And again, number one, Pirates of the Caribbean, colon, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Done
we have
done.
A consensus number one. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your contributions to the show. We're sorry if we didn't get to your feedback. Really, truly do appreciate it. And that is it for episode 352. Wayne, what's happening for episode 353 on the Countdown Movie Interiors Podcast?
It's a show we're doing called Battle of the Toms.
Oh, yeah.
And it's come from one of our patrons, Adam Malure.
Adam Malure, top level patron of the show. Thank you, Adam, for your support of the show. We are behind on doing your choice. We do apologize. Now, how's this going to work, Wayne? What is the pool of films that we're pulling from?
Okay, three actors' films. Tom Hardy, Tom Hanks, and Tommy Lee Jones. And we take a top 10. We create a top 10 based on all of their movies.
Yep.
And when we rank them, no lower to high, reverse order, whatever you call it. And then we crown a top Tom.
A top Tom. I like it. That's good. We did this a while ago for Sexy Chris's.
Mm.
And so that's what we're doing again this week. Battle of the Toms, as per Adam. Thank you for that, sir. That's happening next week. And then after that, we'll be getting to the worst and best of the year shows. So if you've got any suggestions for us, first of all, about Toms, let us know. But then after that, about the worst films we should try to watch to get on the list for 2021, or the best films, which we may not have watched, hit us up. And how do they do that, Wayne?
They hit us up by searching for the Countdown Podcast on the line, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. You can like and follow the show through Podbean, where we host, and Facebook. There's going to be links in the show notes, as has already been mentioned. We can also check out the Patreon feed for extra content.
Come on
over. And the merch store if you want to buy a gift in the new year, because why wouldn't you? Christmas is over for yourself or your loved ones.
Righto.
That's it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
My name is Wayne.
My name is Paul. And this has been The Soundboard.
You're fat, bloated, stupid, idiot.
When you pick Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
I'd still rather do that than use a fucking sound.
We'll catch you next time. See ya.
See ya. Welcome to episode 352 of the Countdown Podcast, where we get Disney on your asses. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. Fuck!
There's a gurgling blooper for you.